It's not easy being green.
Easy or not, it is a green day. It is St. Patrick's Day. Today we're going to be talking about when did we blow it wrong in the entire Christian church world. A lot of questions to answer, to look within, to connect the dots. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, inviting you to this episode number 406 of The Next Step.
It's not easy being.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, it is so good to have you with us today. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I said it there. During sound check today, we were checking the microphones and somehow I got out. Happy Paint Satrick's Day. Ken's been ribbing me about it all morning. We're just alone in the studio. Susie's up in San Francisco. She is producing this show remotely from San Francisco, enjoying San Francisco, I might add, I'm sure. Yeah, the Golden Gate, the beautiful city by the bay. What a beautiful place that is, San Francisco. Big shout out to everybody over there. Hey, I'm glad you're joining us today. We have a great show for you. Got some great little Irish ties since it is St. Patrick's Day. Also, a little bit of information. Who is this St. Patrick? But we're going to be talking about something that really kind of like hit me hard this week. And it's like, how do some of these things evolve? How do we get into these situations? Like, why St. Patrick's Day of all the saints? You know, if you look at your calendar, I'm talking about not church calendar, not any kind of parochial calendar, just a standard calendar. You'll see that, there are the usual dates, the usual holidays. And there is a holiday that is today, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Why the St. Patrick's? What's so special about this saint that he makes it into this holiday list on a rather secular society? That's not to say that St. Patrick isn't a secular feast as it is, but what about the secularization of Christmas and now Easter? Hey, do you have your bunny rabbits? Do you have your eggs, Easter eggs? How about the peeps? Those peeps, yes! A lot of Easter secularization too. I'm going to challenge us today and talk about, like, how do we get to this point? How do these things evolve? What is it that makes a peep a legitimate expression? You know what a peep is, right? Those little marshmallow guys come in these delicious flavors like blue, green, yellow. Well, what makes a peep an expression of Easter? It's a legitimate question. Yeah, it is. It is because it's, well, why are we at this point where we're at today too? What makes us think that these priests, with all of this royal garb, are representatives of Jesus Christ? Or what about all of these beautiful churches with their ornate structures? What makes us believe that these are called houses of God? How do we evolve to this state? And that's what we're going to be talking about. I've got a song of the day, too, that kind of follows along in that path, too. It's actually the Unicorn Song, one of my all-time favorites. But if you think about it, it's another dot in this connection process. So that's where I want to go today. St. Patrick's Day. Let's begin.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions.
Well, are you at least wearing some green somewhere along the way, huh? I took a bottle of Canada Dry ginger ale that I had last night. It's a green bottle. And I cut up the bottom of it, and it looks like a really cool flower, almost like the Armenian forget-me-not flowers, but in green, of course. Made kind of like a nice ornamental medallion to wear today to avoid being pinched on this St. Patrick's Day. Although I'm wearing a green shirt on top of it. Oh, whatever you are, wherever you are. Are you celebrating St. Patrick's Day and why? One of those big questions. Well, bigger question is, how do we get to these points? How do we get to these points where St. Patrick's Day is all of a sudden something that is of national concern, of secular concern? Well, some of the bigger questions, you know, how do we evolve to the point where all of a sudden Santa Claus becomes a representative of Christmas? How do we evolve to a point where a bunny rabbit is an expression of Easter? How do we evolve to the point where these ornate celebratory vestments that are worn by priests become a reflection of the humble carpenter from Galilee? Or these very elaborate, large-scale church buildings become the expression of the humility and egoless life that Christ and certainly all religions, at least in their fundamental form, emphasize, or at the very, very least, at least point to, right? You got these giant, elaborate structures, cathedrals, millions and millions of dollars. Interesting, here in America, we have the political life beginning a few months ago, and right this past weekend, several of the candidates bowed out, and they put I believe it was a news feed from yahoo.com, where they had taken the three or four of the top candidates that had bowed out of the race and said that it cost $200 million to finance their campaigns. And interesting, we look at that and we say $200 million, but nobody says, well, why aren't we feeding the poor with it? But when you look at a church, you look at a church and you say, okay, you've spent $10 million, $20 million building that building. Why aren't you feeding the poor? Why? Because, well, basically a church should be a reflection of the company it represents, right? Namely, Jesus Christ, who was all about taking care of the least of his brothers. Politicians, that's not what they're about, right? So nobody questions and says, why aren't you using that $200 million to feed the poor? No, you spent it to feed your ego, to get into a position, thinking that you could maybe do something, when all along you know that you basically are a politician. And that's not to say that your motives are insincere. It's just to say that because of the nature of the beast, because of the nature of the game, your object is to get most votes, to win popularity, right? So that you can maintain your position, maintain the status quo, at least get into that position. So to secure the popular vote, you need to make certain concessions. And that's just the name of the game. So you play the politics. Well, we come down to the church now, and two big things happened to me last Sunday evening. And that's what I want to share with you, but it's what really prompted this thought in me, and especially I think it's a healthy one to have as we enter into Holy Week. As you know, our Lenten season ends in a couple days, and so begins the holiest of all weeks on the Christian calendar, namely the week that precedes the event of all events, the resurrection. And I think it's important that we have this discussion at this time. So let's think about that for a moment, okay? How did we get to this point? When did we blow it? There's the way to say it. When did we blow it? Where did we go wrong? I like that. That's it. Exactly. That's the point today, okay? When did we go wrong? How did we blow it? How did we blow religion? How did we blow Christianity? Where did we go wrong on this journey? Since Jesus gave us this message, why are we here at this point, 2,000 years later? Why are we dealing with such nonsense when Jesus gave such a pure and beautiful message to us? Okay, Two events. And they both happened last Sunday evening. The first one, St. Matthew's Passion. The Lark Musical Society presented this in Glendale. Some dear friends invited us. We went there. A beautiful, beautiful concert. Johann Sebastian Bach. St. Matthew's Passion. Not only are you hearing the music, you have the words being projected on a screen because the singers, they're singing, they're singing this narrative from the Gospel of St. Matthew, following the last several chapters, the narrative of Jesus's the betrayal of his passion, his crucifixion, his interaction with the disciples at the Last Supper, and so on. And we get to this portion. And first of all, it was just like everything Lark does. It was just beautiful. It was professional. It was poetic and prophetic. I mean, you sat there and you were transported someplace else. Just beautiful. But we're sitting there in this Methodist church and you're looking up. It was at the United Methodist Church in Glendale. Beautiful church. You're looking up and you're looking up through the spires. You're looking up at the stained glass. And you can't help but think, okay, now, this is really beautiful, but this certainly costs a lot of money. But look, for the cost, it is a point of congregation. This is where communities gather. These buildings are not nonsensical, but there is a purpose. And so you pay money and you have this building made. Is there anything wrong with that? Probably not. But it's arguable, right? Okay, you think, how much? Is $1 million okay to spend on a building? Is $2 million? $3 million? I remember back in, we had this big discussion when I was first a priest and we built the St. Andrew Church in Cupertino. The project was supposed to be $750,000. It ended up costing us $1 million because we had to go through two earthquakes there, which kind of delayed the project, but not only delayed it, but also brought out new regulations. This is, of course, in Silicon Valley, famous for lying right on the San Andreas Fault here in California. And we learned a lot of stuff. And so our project cost $1 million. A lot of discussion. Now you go back there 20 years later, and of course $1 million in Silicon Valley. Jeez, we got off cheap. And you look at it, and that same property, that same building, worth many, many times more. Plus, through the years, it had the opportunity of bringing communities together. Okay, so arguably, you can argue that, okay, this money was spent and it served its purpose because it brought together a community around the faith of Christ. But then you look at Jesus Christ and you say, wait, there's something wrong here, right? Now, he's the one who said, help the poor. He says, don't worry about these structures that are here today and gone tomorrow. What is this structure? It could be blown down. It could come down. And certainly an earthquake will prove that right away. But he says, build that cannot be blown down. Soar the treasures that cannot be taken away. The moth cannot eat and the robber cannot steal. Now, how do you reconcile this with all of this ornate, beautiful, lavish, and expensive paraphernalia that we call church? And so I'm sitting there looking at the church, and all of a sudden in Matthew's Passion, we get to the point where Jesus says to, I believe it was to Judas. Remember, there's a portion, there's a part where the woman comes and uses a very expensive oil to wipe Jesus' feet. And Judas turns to Jesus and says, why are you wasting this oil on your feet? We could sell this, the profits we could use to give to the poor. And Jesus says, you will always have the poor. But right now, I am with you. Alluding to the self that God is with you. He is there. So what could be more important on the outside? So what? You could make a few hundred dollars. And I guarantee that every discussion that has taken place about the use of money to justify ourselves in using that money to build these elaborate structures could be justified, could be rationalized with this statement, right? Think about it. You could rationalize it with this statement. You will always have the poor, but Jesus, he's worth more than the poor. We need to build this building. We need to do more because you will always have the poor, but right now Christ is with us. We've justified it 2,000 years ago, and we can justify it today. And so somehow we got to a point where now it's gone off the deep end, right? So you can spend millions and millions and millions of dollars in building these lavish structures. Meanwhile, in the shadow of many of these churches, you see that the poor and the suffering are still there. Much like 2,000 years ago, in Christ's shadow, you saw the suffering people. Now, this is called a means of justification, right? Okay, so this is taking place during the Matthew Passion, and Father Voskin's sitting there looking at these images, and his head's going on about this, and all of a sudden, these scriptural passages coming by. And I thought, you know what? There's the problem right there. We've justified without checks and balances. Without really examining those words. Like, at what point do you stop and you say, is it legitimate for us to spend 10 million? How about 20 million? How about 50 million? How about absurdly $1 billion on a building and justifying and saying it's for God? Well, you can. You can justify anything. Okay, so that evening, I'll tell you the second event because it all comes together there. That evening, we got home. And this is literally a half an hour after we had left the concert. A half an hour, at the most, it could have been 45 minutes after we had left the concert. We get home and we turn on the evening news. This is, I'd say, about 10:30 at night. Watching the news as we're winding down. Yeah, sure, you wind down with the news. Okay, don't press me on that one. Okay, so we're watching the news. All of a sudden, an alert. There is somebody who has stolen a police car and is taking the police on a chase. So, I get excited about police chase. I mean, I'm an old Broderick Crawford Highway Patrol fan. You know, this is to me, it's like, whoa, what's going to happen now, you know? And so I'm watching this chase scene. Call in the family. Susan Bodgerson, come here, take a look. You got to see this, okay? This guy has the audacity to steal a police car, and he's driving everybody following him up to 100 miles an hour down the freeways. Guess where the freeways are? They're just right by us. From West Covina, went right by Pasadena. So basically, we missed it by a few minutes. Not only did we miss the freeway action, but all of a sudden, as we're looking on the television screen, guess where the guy ends up? Right there. Literally a block from where we were at the concert. He's driven all the police there, and you're watching it as it's unfolding. It's real time, okay? We've got a helicopter scene of this, and the car is pulling into an alley. He's a police car. He's stolen this police car. He's got three or four police cars following him. They get into an alley. They pit maneuver him. They smash the end of his car, and they bring him to a turn. He then backs up. He has the audacity to back up and trying to run away from the police, at which point another police cruiser comes in, smashes into him. All of a sudden, you see a bunch of smoke. And you're just like watching it and you're going, what? This is happening here? This is basically, if we were half an hour later, we would have been there. We would have been right there. It was very close to where we had parked too, you know? That's one of the things, but the bigger thing is what's going on. I mean, is this like the Wild West? Already a question that I ask every single day that I get out on the freeways. Okay. So I'm watching this come up, and then all of a sudden, you see the police crew go in with the guns drawn. They've got the car cornered and guns drawn, and then all of a sudden they put their guns down. They put their guns down. And you can only imagine that either the guy is dead inside, which means he's no threat. Or he's not in there. Maybe he left. Because, all, like I said, they smashed him. A lot of smoke. Maybe we missed something and he just kind of went out. Anyway, a few minutes later, I would say maybe about a half an hour later, it was revealed that the man was dead inside of the car. And we went to sleep that night. But it was in the morning when we woke up and turned on the TV that started making the connections and connecting the dots. So, with that, how about if I play the song of the day? An Irish tune from the Irish Rovers called The Unicorn. And I'll tell you how it all fits in. And what happened in the morning? What was on the news? What had happened to that guy in the car? And how does this all fit in with how did we blow it? Where did we go wrong with Christianity? Coming up, here are the Irish Rovers on this St. Patrick's Day.
A long time ago when the earth was green and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen, they'd run around free while the earth was being born. But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Now God seen some sinning and it gave him pain, and he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo and take some of them green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn. Old Noah was there to answer the call. He finished up making the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn. Then Noah looked out through the driving rain. Them unicorns were hiding, playing silly games, kicking and splashing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorns. Green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees. Noah cried, close the door, cause the rain is pouring, and we just can't wait for no unicorn. The ark started moving, it drifted with the tide. Them unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried, and the waters came down and sort of floated them away. And that's why you never seen a unicorn to this very day. You'll see
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, you're never going to see no unicorn.
That's a fun little song from back in the 1960s, the Irish Rovers doing The Unicorn. And, you know, it occurred to me that in the 8 years we've done The Next Step, we've never broadcast on St. Patrick's Day. So it was only appropriate that we pick out this song for today. And I'll tell you how it's all going to fit in just a couple minutes. But I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll have a link on today's show notes so you can check out not only this song, but the Irish Rovers, one of my favorites from a long, long time ago. In fact, I remember this song from a childhood, great comedy team here in Los Angeles on AM radio called Loman and Barkley. And I remember my first hearing of this song on their song. We'd hear it over and over. It was just a wonderful and fun song. And in that fun, there's some questioning that we do too. Foul, look at us. We're always questioning, right? Okay, well, I was telling you, we went, gone to the concert. An hour later, we discover that there's an accident. This accident is being caused by this car that had gone out there and had been stolen. It was a police car. And now the police car had come to a stop and the guy inside was dead. We spent the night. We went to sleep, got up in the morning, turned on the news to find out that he had been the victim of some police action. The man had been shot. Okay? So that last moment that we saw, and that accounts for why the police put down their guns, right? Remember I told you they walked up to it, guns drawn, and all of a sudden they put down their guns. Well, apparently they had shot the guy in there. Now, here's the connection of the dots. Tragic as it is, okay? They want to have a police investigation. They are calling for a police investigation on the circumstances under which the police drew his gun and shot this man. So here's a guy who has not only stolen public property, he has stolen a police car, not only has recklessly driven, I'd say a good 30, 40 miles through Los Angeles traffic, putting countless number of people in jeopardy by driving over speeds in excess of 100 miles an hour inside tight Los Angeles circumstances, had led the police to this this final stop, final destination. The police see this man in the car. Now, remember, it's a police car, right? So you know that the guy is armed. There's no guessing that he may be armed. Well, what do police cars have? They have rifles, they have guns in there, right? So you know the guy has access to all of that. And the police approach him there, and they shoot him. And now there's going to be an investigation. Were the police in their rights? Were they warranted in using violence in killing this man, in subduing this man, excuse me? Now, that's the connection. There's never been that investigation for the church. You get it? Okay, if you don't get it, let me put it straight out, okay? Jesus says you will always have the poor. They will always be with you. But I am with you right now. Let the woman do what she needs to do. And so we justify the building of these big buildings, of these big sanctuaries. But no one ever comes back and questions. No one ever puts it under investigation. And this is partly here in America. I don't know how it is in some of your other countries. In America, the church we have separation of church and state. And so basically the church does have autonomy to run its own books and its own course of actions. And if you're a pretty legitimate church, you get certain dispensations by the government. But this auditing system is not found in the principles of the church. And so we have cases where your priests are vested with these ornate vestments. your bishops with even more ornate and purple and beautiful flowing robes, your popes and Catholicoi, and I have to admit that the Pope is very modest compared to some of the patriarchs and Catholicoi we see in the Eastern tradition. But you have all of these beautiful vestments sprinkled with ornate kind of medallions and crosses and gold everywhere you look. And you justify by saying it is in the service of God. I mean, how could you not use it, right? Isn't that legitimate? How could you not use all this gold? This is for God. You could justify it. And people have. I mean, and you know what? It evolves because there's no internal investigation on it. Yes, there has been external. Yes, what's the Protestant Reformation, right? What is commentary? I mean, how many people have commented about this? We talk about the commercialization of Christmas ad nauseum sometimes. Every year we go through this, right? I mean, think about it, right? Santa Claus is the representative of Christmas. I mean, it started off good. St. Nicholas, he had some good ideas there, right? But now it's turned into this big commercial feast of Santa Claus versus Christ. And it shouldn't be that. It should be working in unison. Same thing with Easter. I mean, you know, the whole idea of Easter eggs. I mean, a tomb, right? Inside of it is new life. Beautiful, right? The tomb, inside the tomb is life. The shell representing that tomb, and you open it up and there's life inside of there. Wow, Easter egg. But it's turned out into something nobody understands. The president invites the young kids to have an Easter egg roll. And there's no mention of resurrection there. Of the reason why you have those Easter eggs. Same thing with bunny rabbits, right? Bunny rabbits, fertility. New life. Beautiful. That connection is lost along the way. Santa Claus comes into our lives, gives gifts. Jesus Christ, the biggest gift giver of all times. Make the connection. But we've lost that. Because there hasn't been an internal investigation. And so these cops go out there, even though we've all witnessed it. Helicopters have video recorded this entire incident of the stealing of public property, driving and so many communities until it stops. And then at the very end, this guy is going mad and he's like pushing away everybody. He's trying to back off. And then cops have to end it by taking away his life. And we're saying you need an internal investigation. And that's how we've blown it in the church. We haven't had that internal investigation. Where did we go wrong? And here is the ultimate on this, okay? The man who invited us to the Saint Matthew Passion. A dear friend, but one of my mentors from when I was very, very young. In fact, first contemplating the priesthood. And I had a discussion with him. This is about 40 years ago. I'm going back 40 years. He was a professor at that time, or he was teaching. And when I told him I was going to go into the church, he said, "Do you know that all institutions have the same purpose of existence?" I said, "What does that mean? I mean, I want to serve God." He says, "No." He says, "Of course, you have reasons why you are there, but their first primary purpose is self-preservation." I didn't understand that at that point. I didn't understand. No. Church is supposed to be serving God. That's our primary purpose. And that's really what screws me up right now. That's why I'm kind of where I am right now. I still believe that should be the primary purpose of the church. And I think a lot of people with good conscience will tell you that is the primary purpose. But what he was telling me was so true. He's talking sociologically, talking as a sociologist, that really all institutions, their first and primary purpose is self-preservation. And when you think about it, so too the church. You have to preserve the rank. You have to preserve your institution. You're not going to rock the boat from inside. And so when I saw this guy get it at the end, and then the police say, okay, now we're going to investigate ourselves, it brought it all home. That's what you need. You need that self-evaluation, self-investigation. And guess what? The church has it. It has it built in right now. This is what we're doing during the Lenten season. It's that self-evaluation. There's nobody else looking at you, proxying you, and saying, okay, these are the bad things about you. You have to do it to yourself. And it's a really big challenge. I mean, governments do it, and they're the ones that move forward. Agencies of those governments, such as the police department, they do it. Those ones that do it properly, look what happens. They come clean and there it is. You do it in your own life. You find the problems in your own lives and you resolve them. You make amends. You turn around the idea of repentance, to turn around. To say, okay, I'm going to leave that bad habit back there and I'm going to be moving forward in this direction. In a direction that aligns me closer to what I know is right. And this type of self-evaluation is really what is necessary within the confines of the church. And we're not having it. And you're not going to have it because the need for self-preservation outweighs any need for self-evaluation, internal evaluation. And so we have this situation where increasingly we are going to be farther and farther away from what Christ demands of us. And the examples are many, as I brought up, okay? Easter, the chickens and the bunny rabbits and the eggs. Christmas, the Santa Clauses and the holly leaves. All started off with very good ideas. But as time went on, we get farther and farther away. The unicorn song started off really good. It's a story of creation, right? The story of what happened. Okay, but then you start building on this. And you build on an imaginary idea of a unicorn. I know, don't tell me that. I still believe in unicorns. But you know where I'm going with it, right? Okay, listen how the framers of that song put it, right? They put it in the context a long time ago when the earth greened. And Brother Noah, he put all the animals in an ark. And guess what? The unicorn didn't make it. That's why we don't see unicorns today. It's basically justifying the story. All in fun. All in fun. But look at the process. The process is one of justifying. Now, in this case, it was fun. I loved the song. But I hope I've made my point. And this is what we do. Unfortunately, not for fun reasons. We do it for self-preservation. Rather than being in tune and in line with the true mission that we're supposed to be doing. And that's why I go to all kinds of pains on the next step in presenting this kind of discussion, in presenting what the church fathers have intended us to believe in. And that's why when I talk about armodoxy, it's so imperative that we understand when I say hoopla, minus the hoopla, that hoopla is the stuff that needs to be evaluated, but we're not evaluating it. The Catholic Church, all hats off to them. Hey, since Vatican II, they've been doing that, right? I mean, that's what Vatican II was about. Look at the entire idea of turning around the altars where they're facing the people. Look at the idea of doing the divine liturgy in the language of the people. And let me share this with you, too. At the end of the concert, we're sitting with our friends. And at the end of the concert of St. Matthew's Passion, this same mentor of mine, our host of the evening, turned to me and he said, just beautiful. He says, of course, you do this every Sunday, don't you? Alluding to the Holy Badarak, to the Holy Divine Liturgy. Understanding that that is the divine liturgy. The divine liturgy is the passion, is the recreation of the passion and over emphasizing the importance of resurrection at the end of that passion. That is the Badarak. He got it. He understood it. When do we understand it? When do we understand that that is the purpose for our existence as a church, as a community? And here is the point of being confounded. Check it out. It only comes by self-evaluation, not from without, but from within. Will it come about from within? No, you can't do it from within, because it would jeopardize your basic existence. Namely, your first point of self-preservation will be jeopardized. And so you can't evaluate from within. The example that the police give us, this internal investigation, works because you have a structure that demands democracy, that demands answers, and you have a hiring and firing policy, so that at the end of the investigation, not to say in this particular one, but at the end of several investigations, you will find that certain people are fired. That doesn't jeopardize the entire institution, the police force. It jeopardizes that person's position within that force. When it comes to the church, it's very difficult to do this without touching the institution itself, because so much of the institution is based on the personalities of these people. And so I don't want to say a catch-22 so much as just an endless loop. And unfortunately, this endless loop also has a ripple effect too. Imagine that endless loop, but it is also rippling. And so you have very nice people like a Saint Nicholas who evolve into a Santa Claus and then become uncontrollable. You have a very nice idea of a small little chick coming out of an egg, representing the idea of Christ, new life coming out of a tomb, which is now gone, has evolved to the point of no return. And that ripple cannot be brought back in, because now we have Easter egg hunts and Easter egg rolls on the president's front lawn. And it's all in the name of Easter. Now you know. No, I've wanted to use this expression for how many years, but I don't think there's been ever a time where it's more appropriate. Now you know the rest of the story. I'll be back in a couple moments.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you to all of you who support this ministry. You know, what we talked about today, I talked about so much about the institution, and I hope that as Next Step listeners, you understand that this could be applied to all aspects of your life. It's that inner struggle that we go through as human beings to be able to evaluate our lives and really find some constructive means by which to evolve so that our work, our lives are meaningful and they're full. And that's what we do here at The Next Step and Epostle. We try to bring the bottom line to what Christ was all about, to give us that meaningful life, that life that was full and abundant, as he says in his own words. We have so much to share with you. During the week, I'm tempted so many times to just sit in front of the microphone and at least record some other sessions because there's so much to talk about. For instance, here in the United States, Justice Antonin Scalia passed away a couple weeks ago. And in his passing, they referenced a lot of his work while sitting on the bench, 30 years as a Supreme Court justice. But one thing really hit me. He talked about the Constitution, and he was literalist, and he said the Constitution is not a living document. And that hit me. You know, like a lot of people want to believe that faith, religion, the Bible is not a living document. And so if it's not living, it's whatever is written in there, that's the way it is. And there is no opportunity for growth. There is no opportunity for evaluation, for dialogue. You know, black is black and white is white. Well, are there shades of gray in between? And can you find those shades of gray? And I hope that this ministry has been, if nothing else, that opportunity to kick off ideas, to hear a priest talking about these issues which pertain to church, but they also pertain to the ultimate church, which is our lives, where God is residing. And can God be outside of us, or is God within us? Esoteric ideas too, of course. Yes, you need to ask those questions. That's part of life too. Like, if God is within us, can he be without us? Can we be without him? Big questions. And some of the questions that that boggle our mind. For instance, I started off by telling you about St. Patrick. Do you know why we celebrate St. Patrick? Let me read you a little piece by a guy named Christopher Nigers. There was more to St. Patrick's Day than potted shamrocks and other green decorations. By the way, did you have green beer today? When my kids were small, no green beer. We had green milk. Be imaginative, okay? That's on the sideline. Anyway, let me continue here. There is the man himself, one of the most popular saints in all of Catholicism, and as luck would have it, the patron saint of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Look at that. I didn't even know that. Did you know that? The patron saint of Los Angeles. That's pretty cool, okay? Who was the real St. Patrick? Well, he was given the name Maiwin Sukat, born around 385, somewhere in Roman Britannica, maybe Scotland. Around the age of 16, he was captured by Irish pirates, sold into slavery in Ireland, where he was forced to work for 6 years as a shepherd. He was not particularly religious before he was enslaved, but turned to faith and prayer during his slave years. He was prompted to escape by an angel in a dream. He was reunited with his family, ordained a priest, and spent decades as a monk. Then another dream called him to return to Ireland to preach to and convert the Druids. Oh, that's interesting, huh? The Druids and other pagans there. In 432, before going to Ireland, he went to Rome, where the Pope made him a bishop, at which time he received the name Patricus, or Patrick as we know him today, right? Patrick is said to have used the three-leaf shamrock to explain the Trinity. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. But triads and trinities were already present in Druid mysticism before Patrick. One could even argue that the Druids gave the concept of the Trinity to Christianity rather than the other way around. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, that's what we do here on The Next Step. We look at that interest because it means we're evolving. It means we are alive. We're not dead. You don't want to be dead, okay? You want to evolve. That's a good thing. It means that you're thinking. It means you're using the rational resources that God has given you. It means your heart is beating and it is touching. It is being touched. And part of the In His Shoes experience is to act upon that touchiness of the heart, to act upon not just reason, but upon the real love that's inside of all of us. And so that's what we do here. That's the expression that we have. That's what the next step is about. It's nothing to be scared of. And we do it with a lot of pride. I think we're doing a pretty good job of it. And I thank you for your support. Now, all the questioning that we do, all of the fun that we have over here is around our common faith. And you can't be scared to examine, to question, and to really engage with that faith. That's part of the fun, isn't it? You can't be scared. And I think that's what I wanted to impress upon you today. We have so many different things that we want to share with you. We can go on in many, many different directions, but I really appreciate you supporting this ministry. We have a lot of fun in asking those kind of questions. But even more, I think the fun is hearing your responses. When I get your emails, when I get the messages that you share about your life, about your personal journey, about where you're going, it just really fills my heart up to know that this ministry is touching people in so many diverse and meaningful ways. Listen, we are at the end of today's show. Before we go, I do want to wish you all the best on this Holy Week. It is the most important of all weeks. If you're part of the Armenian Church community, I invite you to get involved in the services, because in the Armenian Church, one of the few churches where we not only commemorate, but we actually live the Holy Week services. If you happen to be in Glendale, do get involved with us. We have some great programs going on. This Easter Sunday, I will not be celebrating the main Divine Liturgy. As you know, we're in transition in St. Peter's Glendale, and I'm going to be transitioning out of there. But in the meantime, we've got some alternative services. And do check your email. If you're not on the Epostle email list, please drop us a note, feedback@epostle.net. Do check out our website, In Issues Epostle. You'll find all kinds of information. Next Thursday happens to be Holy Thursday. To me, it is the most sacred day of the entire year, because it really lays the foundation for all of life, namely with the words of institution that our Lord Jesus Christ gave to us, that this is his body and this is his blood. We'll be celebrating in a very special way. Got a lot of stuff coming up. Stay with us, okay? But for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. For Susie, our producer up in San Francisco, who will be doing her magic in the next few moments. For Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off by one top visits.